Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Anything But Typical podcast. This is going to be fun. Every one of them's fun. But I've known Jeff Warner for a while now, and he has a real legitimate company. And so we had to wait until his company was really legitimate before we had him on here. But I wish you guys could see this. If you're going to watch it on YouTube or whatever, you'll know. You'll think that it's Christian McCaffrey. So if I call you Christian, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That's all right. But
Not the worst thing in the world to be called.
But, you know, Christian McCaffrey is known for football. He's also a concert pianist, if you didn't know that. But Jeff Warner, aside from being the founder of Pair.PEO, is also an extraordinary bowler, evidently. We found this out. And so, Jeff, here's the situation. You've got your monogrammed bag and you're walking, but it doesn't say Jeff Warner, it just has your initials. And it is psychedelic and it has iridescent and iridium monograms, evidently. But you're getting ready to go from the parking lot into the Bolero on South Boulevard, and somebody sees you and they start talking about you and they say, hey, that's Jeff Warner. But they don't realize that you can overhear everything that they're saying. What would you want somebody to say about you?
That guy has great hair. I'd like them to say that I'm honest and myself. I think a lot of my past 5 years kind of building this business allowed me to do that a lot more than previously in the corporate ecosystem.
That's good. Well, for those who are not able to watch him and see him, he's got a hat on
all the time
and he does not have a lot of hair. He's kind of in the same ilk that I am, which is not that much.
But my head's big enough the hats actually fit me, Gary.
Yeah, that's true. I have to use children's hats. So anyway,
we'll get you a nice
rest of us here,
Gary. All right, Jeff, let's dive in, because I want you to paint the picture for the listeners of pre-founding a company. What entrepreneurial exposure did you have? Were you surrounded by that growing up? Was it just something that you were interested in? Because we've found that there's typically some sort of evolution before somebody's willing to pull the trigger to start a company. So I'm curious what it is for you.
I am a little bit different, I'd say. I'm one of four or five kids in the family. Kids, I'm almost 35 years old now, but I still feel like a kid. Dad was a lifer at Timken, which I'm sure you've heard of. Literally started there at 18 years old and didn't retire from there until he moved down here to follow us to Charlotte.
Wow.
My mom was in the real estate space, so technically she's working in an entrepreneurial capacity, you know, go figure out your pathway forward, working on our own P&L and those types of things. So that was a bit of a, I guess if you're going to use the entrepreneurial parallel, you can use it there. But more than anything, I think it was just being inside of a corporate environment was what, and starting to read business books started giving me a lot of inspiration about how can I create my own path, or do I sit inside the system and try to continue to climb the ladder and those types of things is really what the devil and the angel on the shoulders were for me.
What were some of those catalysts while you were working in the corporate world where you finally got to the point, you're like, all right, I'm reading these books, I'm mapping this out. What got you to the point of saying, okay, I'm ready, I've got to go start something on my own?
Yeah, I'd say it was just a byproduct of the industry, and I'm sure we'll get into the PEO industry a bit, but it's a long tail sales cycle, lots of value dev. Clients don't really understand if they're going to be able to afford what you're trying to sell them until you're three or four meetings in. And I was a 25-year-old running around Charlotte, bending a lot of windshield time and trying to figure out if what I was trying to sell them was actually going to work. So after about 2 years of doing that the old, you know, corporate way, I was like, let me just start getting pricing out of the conversation immediately. And I realized that I could accelerate expectation on the client side. If they still wanted to talk to me when they knew what pricing was likely going to look like, then we should continue talking. If I knew, and if they couldn't handle the price point right at the get-go, I could pivot them to somebody that would be a little bit more in line with what they were expecting and what they could say yes to. So the business kind of built itself in concept while I was a W-2, just walking myself out of rooms and telling clients that I wasn't the right fit because the price point wasn't there. And it was all in the mindset of efficiency. and knowing mm-hmm. that we're in the Twitter age where everyone's attention span is microscopic, and doing all that windshield time just felt very, you know, inappropriate for the times that we're currently sitting in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you're way ahead from where most people are at that point, meaning you're willing to sacrifice sales and walk away from something for the efficiency of what you're trying to do, which is a true entrepreneur type mindset, right? Most people get caught up the other way of, I just need to chase the next sale.
Right.
So that in itself, I don't know if you meant to or not, but that in itself is showing where your mindset was even while you were a W-2.
Right. Yeah, no, I definitely find in as we talk through this, a lot of what I'm building is really meant around efficiency, helping people know when they're in the right room at the right time and helping them walk away when they're not in the right room. I'd say that's more important is helping people not say yes whenever they shouldn't say yes.
Yeah. So mention or share with everybody what PEO is and talk a little bit about the industry, just so the people who don't know about it or at least are limited have
sure.
an idea.
Sure. I'll give a high level explanation. The industry certainly overcomplicates itself. It's really just a bundled buying power strategy for small, medium sized businesses, leveraging a co-employment relationship with a professional employer organization is what the industry's acronym breaks out to. So what that does is basically gives all your employment relationship responsibility over to the PEO. So it's really great for managing state-to-state compliance. You see it very effectively deployed in heavily distributed workforces, especially when they have California employees. And as a byproduct of that, you're driving down medical premiums, which is the most inflationary line item on almost every small, medium-sized business that you see. So really trying to target somewhere between a 20, 30, 40% savings on your medical premiums to help offset administrative fees in the PEO industry to be a part of their payroll system and be co-employed with them.
Yeah.
You probably have more questions now, but I tried to dumb it down to that. There's a lot more that goes into it, but by, you know, as a practical use, it's really leveraging automation, turnkey compliance, and getting benefit offsets to help drive down costs for the company and the employees.
Yeah, and not to blow your head up too much because we still need the hats to fit, but what you've been able to do for us at Destination Wealth has been unbelievable, right? It's driven down cost. Every time we bring a new person on, they're blown away at what we have from a healthcare standpoint for a 15-person company,
right?
We have access to things at pricing and also just products that we would have no access to otherwise.
Right.
And that's the type of role that you're coming in and you're helping small to mid-sized businesses like us solve those problems and be able to act as if they are multi-hundred person entities.
Right. Absolutely. And again, like whenever I was, you know, working in the corporate world, I would see how much different the price points would be whenever you're in a competitive room or versus an uncompetitive room.
Yeah.
So that was a big piece for me too. Like if you're going to go out to a client and believe in what you're selling and knowing that it's inflated by 30%, it takes a pretty concerted effort to put your head in the sand and smile through your teeth and know that your client's about to get charged way more than they would be if they just went and talked to your competitor and got another quote or two. So our model obviously creates a competitive environment in every situation and really puts the best interests of the client at the forefront of those conversations.
So before we get too far into the business, and Brock, I want to pull you in a little bit on that. I want to take a step back and focus a little bit more on you because you have a skill set that is very similar to Gary that I envy because it's not me. And it's the networking and the connecting and being able to, you were at our CEO event, right? And with halfway through the day, you're making real deep connections with people who were complete strangers 4 hours mm-hmm. ago. And I want to talk a little bit about that of, is that a natural thing that you've always had? Is it a focus? Is it something that you have to be conscious of? I'm really curious there.
I think that, and Brock can probably speak to this a little bit more. Brock's more the social butterfly than I was innately. I'd say like I was in the networking game, and just like anything, whether it's public speaking or playing golf or bowling, the more
you're going to have to edit that out.
or drinking your water.
Right.
The more practice you have, the more comfortable and how comfortable you are in any of those rooms. So, you know, even whenever we're working with, and I try to take every conversation I have with a prospect, a partner, or just a general business contact all the same. So whenever I'm having a first conversation with a prospect, I don't prepare for it. I just assume that we're going to have a dialogue and we're either going to we're either going to jive or we're not. And most of the time we do. So that's kind of how I look in the networking world, is that I don't really get surprised by a topic that comes up. I generally, if it's something does come up that I haven't heard of, I'm more curious about learning something new.
Yeah. Interesting. And Gary, you are very purposeful about this. Can you talk a little bit of your, whether you want to call it networking or relationships, yeah, or whatever, talk a little bit about your purpose behind that and why that's such an integral role in your day-to-day.
Well, if anybody's out there in charge of doing business development, and if you're like me and kind of like you, we eat what we kill and that's it, right? So we're just kind of based on that, you have to do it.
Yeah.
But for me, people aren't transactions. They are not poker chips to be leveraged and played. They're sacred, you know, they really matter. And Charlotte is a great place for people that have that philosophy, because it wears thin. You can see it really quickly. If somebody is just playing you because you got something that they need, et cetera, you can feel it.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that I knew and I noticed about you, Jeff, when we first met, probably close to 8 years ago, because it was shortly after I came here almost 9 years ago where we met. Was it Steve Kinsler or somebody?
It was probably Kinsler, and we probably met at Central Coffee right below.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I'm going to make it convenient for Gary. He's a busy guy.
It was even before I was here, though. Because I've been here almost 5 years. Yeah, I was with Robert Fish. So anyway, that was one thing that was really interesting. And what's funny is I can look at a building right across the street over here where I was doing some coaching with Fish. And I'm like, hey, I did a full day for them because he needed a stunt double. So I took it for him. And I said, hey, have you guys ever heard of a PEO? They were perfect size for it, and they hadn't. And I explained what it was, and I said, all right, I'm going to give you three companies. High end, which was Insperity, where you were.
Mm-hmm.
Middle of the road, got an ADP, and then there's a BBSI, which was kind of a lower price point. They still had to go through the beauty pageant of hearing what a PEO is, why their widget is better than somebody else's widget. And it's this beauty pageant of a whole bunch of Mandarin Chinese being spewed at you because you don't know what the heck they're talking about.
And right.
You're nodding your head as if you do. And then it's like, well, what's the price and what does this really mean?
Right.
Well, then I meet with you and because you went out on your own about that time. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. You've built a better mousetrap because you've taken that beauty pageant out. The client doesn't have to pay you a dime. These other people pay you because it's almost like you're a manufacturer's rep.
Right.
But you have no bias.
Right.
Because, and you knew the industry because you were with the Cadillac. You saw everybody else. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. So from that point on, I said, if anybody needs to talk about a PEO, you go see Jeff Warner, because you were the first one to build anything like that here in Charlotte.
Yeah. And again, like it was, a lot of it became part of the whole networking philosophy that we were building up that you were speaking about earlier. Mm-hmm. Where I came from in Ohio, it was closed loop networks. I mean, lots of old mindsets, pick up the phone, smile dial, volume game. And then when I got ingrained in Insperity and I realized how powerful your allies can be to creating your pipeline and putting you in appropriate rooms when you're in appropriate rooms. And then I realized, well, if I'm going to go out in this capacity, all of a sudden appropriate rooms just got a hell of a lot bigger. And I'm not sitting with this very finite sweet spot bullseye that's very challenging to find the right room. I can really just be agile enough to be appropriate for anybody I'm talking to. And when I'm not, walk away and not feel bad about a missed opportunity that wouldn't have made sense anyway.
Yeah. Take us through more of your thought process in the building of that better mousetrap, right? You're at Insperity. You say, okay, I'm going to go do my own thing. You've been reading these books. What's that look like as you're actually designing Pair PEO?
I'd say it was largely being collaborative with my competition. having good working relationships with people in my, because like you, when you're in siloed inside of one corporation, you assume that what you're being told is the absolute truth. And then you start talking to peers of yours with other organizations. You're like, wait, you're selling this for this? And I was, and then so you start doing a little bit of like, okay, well, this makes me more appropriate for all these opportunities I walked away from, you know, the 4 years that I was there. And, you know, as I was kind of brainchild and everything up, it was, for me, it was getting out of the corporate wagon wheel and trying to do it over and over again and being much, like, autonomy was really what drove me to entrepreneurial, like this seat that I'm currently sitting in.
Yeah.
I want to be able to make decisions that made sense for my clients and not just be pushing whatever my employer was wanting me to push. And so that's really what I'd say attributed my confidence in making the jump was understanding my competition, having peers in those places, knowing that, okay, I can partner with these people whenever I go off on my own. I don't really have to go start from zero. And then obviously just the natural conversations with my mentors in town. I'm one of those guys that generally talks about what I'm going to do to everybody.
Right.
And like, I want people to tell me why I'm going to fall on my face and I just wasn't hearing any of that. So I had enough of those conversations to give me the confidence and the network to be able to feel comfortable and making the leap.
And so you pulled the Band-Aid off, Pair PEO begins. You are now a founder and CEO. What were some of the misperceptions you had going into starting your own company that you're now looking back in that hindsight get to realize?
I mean, there's a huge lag between inception and income. I know that every founder probably has a pretty optimistic pathway to their own personal break even of where they were and those types of things. You know, my wife was a second grade teacher. We lived off of her salary for 2 years.
Yeah.
While we were building this thing up. And again, like it's one of those things that you you understand that if in an ideal world, if everything goes perfectly, I might have a paycheck in 12 months.
Yep.
And obviously you're going to get punched in the face all along the way. The pandemic happens. And then all of a sudden my intrinsic motivators of networking and being around people and just being around people all the time went from every single day, multiple meetings to I'm sitting on Zoom calls and I forget the person I talked to by the time the next one starts. Just, it was very lonely at that point in the business. Cause it was just me at that point. And the whole pandemic took away the support board, I'd say, that I had just to the natural networking I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Brock, I want to pull you in here.
Yeah.
We've alluded to Brock a few times. Nobody knows who that is. So Brock's a VP of client success. You talk about your guys' relationship first, because I think the listeners understanding that is going to help know where I'm going to go.
Yeah. Jeff and I are first cousins. So our moms are sisters. And in fifth grade, Jeff was in sixth grade, our moms decided to build homes next to each other. So not only were we first cousins, we turned into next door neighbors. And Jeff and his two brothers essentially became my brothers, as close as a brother could be for me.
Mm-hmm.
So we've really been attached to the hip. We obviously went to high school together. Jeff would drive me in his white Camaro to high school. And we went to college together, University of Akron, both in business school. I looked up to Jeff a lot in life and kind of followed in his footsteps. We lived together in Akron, Ohio, not a lot going on there. And then we made the big decision to move down to Charlotte. So that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And bought a home together, our first home together. We sold our first home together. So we had a lot of firsts in our lives.
Wow.
So we're used to working together in a lot of different capacities.
Yeah.
Prior to this.
So Jeff and I complement each other, I think, very well. Mm-hmm. I have a full head of hair. Jeff's bald.
Yeah. had to get that one.
Yeah. I mean, he's very well built. For those that are watching, his biceps are bulging here. I'm very, very skinny. But overall, Jeff's definitely a visionary, a big picture guy. I think the role he's in and what he's built, it's fantastic and it's very, very impressive. I'm more of an executioner. Come in, give me a task, I'm going to knock it out. So, you know, my career has been mostly in client success and the software startup world, and very excited for Jeff when he started Pair PEO, and he was into the business about 3 years and was obviously very, very successful, but it got to a point where
mm-hmm.
He had about 70 clients. He felt the relationship with his existing clients was fading. And so as we were at Thanksgiving dinner, I remember talking about this at Thanksgiving, but Jeff kind of gave me kind of the side eye and said, hey, this thing's going so well that I think I need some help, and I think you could help me out with this. So Jeff focuses to this point, Jeff focuses on everything front end, all the brokering, understand the client's needs, going through discovery, and then going through the full RFP to helping clients understand what's the best PEO fit at the best price. My world is when a transition actually takes place. A client signs on with the PEO, they now enter my world of client success. So I'm there to kind of oversee onboarding and implementation, making sure the PEO is upholding what was promised on the front end of the sale, and then checking in quarterly with our clients, making sure service is up to snuff, and then helping them with their renewal strategy year over year.
And what's the ongoing day-to-day interaction look like between you two? Because you hit on something of Jeff's the visionary, you're more of the integrator, the execution side of it. So what's that day-to-day look like? How do you complement each other there, and how do you make each other better?
Brock, I tell most people I'm the guy that makes the messes, and Brock's the guy that cleans everything up. I had no CRM. I had no anything before the company. It was literally just circumstantial. Something sparked me on LinkedIn, and that's when I'd reach out to people. That's really how I ran the business for the first 3 years. So we actually have tasks every day now that I need to make sure that I do, that he keeps me accountable to. We work out of an office here in Dilworth. I knew, and I'm a father of two, and once my daughter turned one, I knew that I had to have a space to go to. So I think this whole work from home thing works really well as long as millennials don't have any kids. But as soon as the kids come around, it becomes a hell of an ask. So I bought the condo over in Dilworth, and then was ready to start formalizing my strategy to try to bring Brock on soon thereafter. But yeah, we work out of there every day. It's really good for me to be in there. We were early risers, so we try to be there by 7. We can clean up a lot of stuff before the day gets started. And then depending on the day, it's just a lot of meetings. I mean, a lot of things that we just have to be on, and him on the client side. And honestly, Brock works a lot on, you know, partnership nurturing and things like that. We just hired a fractional CMO. Like, a lot of the things that have happened with the company the last 2 years would have never happened without him next to me.
Right. Yeah. Brock, when you came in, obviously you had heard, because you two are so close, you've heard all about how Pair PEO is going and the evolution of that. But then you're in. Now all of a sudden you're a part of this. It's not from the outside looking in.
Yep.
What were some of the first things that you said, hey, I have to prioritize this because it's going to make the company better?
Yeah, it's really being able to document and track where we are.
It's those tasks that you're giving Jeff every day?
Yeah, task. I mean, obviously the CRM and understanding our pipeline from a sales pipeline and also a renewal pipeline of all of our current clients. So just putting little operational and things that can be systematically applied to Jeff's business is just going to help us stay on track and stay on task and help us meet our goals. But the whole focal point here of the first 2 years is build out a strong foundation so that we can scale the company as large as we want to scale it. And without some of those foundational pieces, I don't think we would really be able to get to our goals as quickly as we want to. So that was really my whole focal point when I came in. Yes, client success, build a relationship with our clients, that's at the forefront. But operationally, what can we do to help us propel and scale more efficiently? And now we're kind of turning the key here of how can we pull Jeff out of the day-to-day task and some of the things that he's really in the weeds on. He does them so well, but we need to pull Jeff out so he can be a true CEO of the company. Mm-hmm. We can put people beneath him that we're delegating. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the turning point that we're kind of approaching right now.
Yep.
Yeah. And again, like when I brought Brock on, it was very hard for me to not do things that took me 30 seconds and him struggle through things for hours, you know? And so like, that's the hardest thing, I think, when you go from one to whatever, 0 to 1, is realizing that they need to struggle through those things. Cause whenever I started the company, I struggled through those things, but you just get, you know, you get impatient whenever you see something that's like, let me just go ahead and do this. But eventually over time, I feel like I've gotten better and better about the things I know he can handle, the things he can champion, the things I can just take out of my purview until I need to look at it.
Yeah. I know I can certainly relate to that, probably a little too much, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners can too, right? Yeah. That's a difficult thing to do, to realize, all right, I'm going to let him struggle, and I'll support him, but it's going to take 10 times as long as me doing it. But 6 months from now, everything's going to be a lot better because it'll be just as good.
Right. And then I won't have to do it at all anymore. Right. So yeah, like it's hard to sacrifice the short-term frustration with those inefficiency. Because again, everything's about efficiency in this business. And so that's when, again, like you have to start looking forward. You have to understand that I can't keep doing the front soldier grind all the time without having some diminished returns over time. So, he's done a great job. Again, you're 2 years into it now.
Yeah.
Company turns 5 years old tomorrow. So we're just humming along. And I wanted to make a point, too, about Brock's relationship with the clients and our ongoing relationship with the clients, which is very important, but it's hard to convey to, a new client. Like, we get paid in perpetuity on these accounts, just like a healthcare broker would on managing their healthcare program in a traditional sense. So versus my direct rep, adversaries, like, they're usually getting compensated one time on these things. And then, they don't really care about the mess they're leaving behind. In our world, like, we want to make sure our clients are happy endorsing the industry. And if they're not, like, let's figure out if we need to find them a new home or help them exit. Because it's really in our best interest to make sure that they're happy and fulfilled as it relates to the partnerships that we're creating for them.
Yeah. Your industry is filled with a whole lot of hunting and not a lot of farming.
Right.
And you flip that script where, hey, no, it makes sense for us financially to keep supporting and helping you,
right?
Not your transaction.
Right. And I think that most PEO brokers that will pop up inevitably, and there's been a multiplier effect of PEO brokers across the country, most of them are going to hire producers. They're going to hire more salespeople, bring more revenue, and they're going to ignore whether or not the clients that are in their ecosystem are even happy at all.
Yeah. So it's definitely a really good strategy, because if we find that a client is unhappy with the PEO that we linked them up with, we're there to support them. We can run another RFP. We can help them find that next transition. And if we had the same mindset as some other PEO brokers, where it's just more of a set it and forget it, and they're going to stay in our payroll until they turn, that would be a disservice to us and to our clients. So if we can keep a pulse on how things are going, and we can act when things maybe aren't going as well as they initially thought, we're just essentially there to consult our clients end to end. Front end, understanding the industry, and when you're in it, what do I do if things are going bad? Well, you got PEO to lean on to help you navigate the waters that might not be as smooth as you originally thought.
Yeah, so Brock, on that point, it's a lot of times almost people don't know what they don't know, right? And so unless there's a really evident pain point,
right,
they may not even have any idea that there's something that they're missing. So as you're going through these client relationships, the quarterly check-ins, things like that, how are you pulling and extracting the information to figure out of, hey, do we need to make a pivot? Do we need to suggest offering something different?
Yeah, it is actually pretty apparent when things are going well. There's not any secret sauce that I have to probe them to really pull it out. It's really just, I think Jeff's philosophy is focusing on the math first, and we take a look at those renewals, and we have a strategy around getting in touch with them and making sure that we're protecting them in case a large renewal gets dropped on them out of left field. So I think if we just have a systematic process in place to be proactive with our clients, to let them know, hey, this could happen, and we're going to protect you by running a proactive RFP and have alternative quotes available to you to pivot to in the event you get an unfavorable renewal.
Yeah.
That's the type of coaching and feedback that we're essentially just laying on to our clients. It's obvious if PEO is dropping the ball, they're messing up their payroll, they mess up something with the 401k, there was an issue as far as when they had to let go of somebody, the PEO wasn't any help from an HR perspective. Those are very obvious things that they can relay to me. But where we can really have some secret sauce and some really education is, this is what you can expect, and here are the steps we're going to take to make sure you're supported along the way.
Yeah. Right. And that proactivity was a big part of what I was driving at, because you take me, for example, I'm going to have no idea about other PEOs and what are their price points and what did they just add that the one I'm currently on isn't. And that proactivity that you two offer is really refreshing. because it takes the stress off. I don't have to worry about go look at 15 different companies every single year just to make sure that we're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'd say to echo Brock there, like clients engage with us in a very honest way. So like we try to maintain that throughout the relationship. Like Brock, whenever he's first introducing or getting introduced to the client, he's like, tell me when things are just a little itchy. Like don't wait for it to freaking swell up and be a huge issue. Like let's make sure we cauterize things very quickly. So I find that clients are always much more lenient with their vendor sometimes and until it hits a point of explosion. But if they would just bring us in early, we can obviously solve that problem before it becomes a problem. So and it's funny, even on the sales side, you know, as a agnostic third party that isn't wearing the shield of the companies that I'm, you know, letting quote on these deals, you know, they may go through a demo with the client. Sales rep thinks it was awesome. Like all the feedback was fantastic. And then I'll talk to the client on the other side. They're like, yeah, we hated that. We're never going in that direction. So like, it's just the nature of, people's niceties that can be a little bit misleading where they don't want to say that directly to a sales rep. But we try to be behind the curtain therapist for them and just be like, okay, just tell me what you hated. And we'll make sure we're solving for that before it becomes a problem.
And the majority of the PEOs we work with, I have relationships with senior level service and onboarding teams. And so if I catch wind from a client that things might be getting off the rails, I have those monthly calls with the PEOs to provide that feedback. Maybe some feedback the client wasn't willing to share with them in their direct point of contact over there. But my goal is to let's do everything we can with the PEO to collaborate and get this client in good standing, kind of work from the top down and get the client in a better position. And if we don't see any improvement with that, that's when we pull the trigger and say, all right, let's now turn our attention to pivoting and get you in a better relationship with another PEO.
So I want to interject a couple observations for anybody listening. First of all, just in the little bit that we know of your story, hey, I got this entrepreneurial itch. I'm ready to roll. Be prepared to starve for a couple years. Have a plan that, you know, it's a lot tougher. Everybody looks at these, you know, AvidXchange, for example. Oh, it's a $1 billion thing, went public, blah, blah, blah. It was a startup a long time ago,
right?
20 plus years ago, but people don't see that part.
Yeah. They see the current. They don't see the journey behind it.
Yeah. Overnight success that takes 20 years.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's one. But the second thing is you went from creating a job, but you're wanting to build a company.
Right.
And so you created a job. You were chief cook and bottle washer and all of those things. You also knew your strengths, your weaknesses, the stuff that made you thrive, the stuff that made you wither.
Right.
Your first hire was very critical. And anybody listening, your first hire is probably one of the most critical hires you're going to have. Mm-hmm. Every hire is critical. But the fact that you guys had some track record with one another and you knew strengths, weaknesses, you knew each other, which, man, that leapfrogs a whole lot of problems.
Right.
And it could also create problems because your family, your blood, you know, like, so I do want to actually talk a little bit about that. Like, how do you work through that? But I also want to paint the picture of, all right, so you, and it's not just the two amigos here.
Right.
Like, you've got a team now. It's a bigger team. You continue to scale. What's that look like now, and where do you want to go?
Sure. I want to tell a quick story real quick about when we brought Brock on, because I think it's funny how much anxiety I had about it. So we did predictive index of Brock and basically validated everything that we knew through the decades of living together and going through a whole bunch of obstacles throughout life. Because I was really the most nervous I've ever been was trying to sell me hiring Brock to my wife.
Mm.
And honestly, we get a lot of, you guys, can I say shit on here?
No, we cannot say that.
We get a lot of shit from our friends and they'll just say, what are you guys watching TV or playing video? Like, we honestly don't turn the TV on. We had never had a video game in the office. We're actually a pretty boring culture when it comes down to like our normal work day. But I did all of this pre-prep and I don't really prepare for sales meetings or anything, but I knew my wife, I'm like, okay, she's going to come with all kinds of objections and
the most important sales.
I'm getting ready to like hand over this predictive index of how great our personalities match up and all this. And I'm like, hey, I'm thinking about hiring Brock. And she's like, okay, cool. And I was just like,
really?
And this is as the business had started proving out, okay, this is working. Financially, we're doing well. And there's really no reason to be pessimistic about the future. So I like to tell people about how much I actually prepared for something that ended up being literally a 2 second close, and I just my anxiety evaporated. And then I was like, oh shit, he's actually going to come on board. And then it was all about trying to figure out, okay, how's this going to work? When you're going to be in here? Those types of things. But to answer your question about the future, I find that our industry, I'm looking at potential acquisitions. I find that our industry doesn't do a great job with hands-on HR support. So I think an HR partner could be a very obvious acquisition for us, as you know, the industry continues to commoditize itself with new players. Tech automation, toolboxes and stuff are all great, but if you have nobody in there swinging the hammer, you're not getting a whole lot for what you're paying inside of the PEO relationship. So that's where I see our next move is potentially making an acquisition. And once we have that, I think we'll be much better at our own human capital strategy for Pair PEO. Because again, like we've done some hiring in the past. We have a gal in Philly. She's a rock star person, great mom. She joined us in more of the producer seat just to be able to manage another market that wasn't Charlotte. Yep. And I feel like, you know, as we grow, like me being the hiring person is probably not like the best thing for the business. I think I need some other people that are really living in that ecosystem, because I'm an impatient entrepreneur, so I'm not going to go through rigorous interview processes as much as I did with Brock, because that one happened so easily. I guess I didn't really think that I needed to be doing that for every future hire. Mm-hmm. But that's really what I'd like to do next. I think it's an exciting like chapter for the company, and if we can do that, I think we can really help clients get into a great PEO relationship, but then also operate inside of that with HR support on our side that isn't coming directly from the PEO, which can be frustrating at times.
Yep.
So I do have to interject another question here.
You're allowed to do that. You are a co-host. This, you could do the rest of the podcast. I can sit back and watch it.
No, Ben's way better than I am at it. But so far the story has been really good. Like, okay, you ate beanie weenies for 2 years mm-hmm. while your wife is going, you know, teaching school and all that. And then you really bone up and you do the whole predictive index thing because you're having to sell to your wife. Talk to me and the audience about something that didn't go so well and what you learned from it.
I'd say, honestly, as the company was scaling, I thought the pandemic was the end of the world. Honestly, I was, again, like, because you talk about thrive and wither. I thrive around people, yes. And I wasn't being around people anymore, and it was really just sucking me down to my core. It ended up being a massive accelerant for the industry, believe it or not. Work from home became a very well received adoption. So there was people that were getting hired out of market. So all of a sudden the PEO concept makes a lot more sense when you got a heavily distributed workforce. I guess in that moment, it was more about the loneliness on the island during a time that was really lonely for everybody, was really the biggest challenge I've had throughout the company. Really outside of that, I don't really have a lot that I would, although I did make a really bad hire.
I was just curious if you were going to go.
Oh ahead. Yeah. I don't want to.
Don't use names.
Yeah. I made a bad hire, made some mistakes. And I've also, like a lot of entrepreneurs, ended up getting, you know, strong armed into a Zoom info relationship because I had somebody do an outsourced BDR work for me on their corporate license. And they tried to sue me for, or become a client. That was the, when I talked to their sales rep, I was like, that's the best biz dev strategy you ever had. You get on these calls, it's either we're going to sue you for $100K or you can pay us $20,000 for the next 3 years and be a client of ours. And I was like,
really?
And I'm not a hunter. So like this license for me, it was like useless. I'm like, I'm not going to go create lists and call on lists. It's not really my, my MO. So, like those are some of the trivial, like financial mistakes I made along the way.
Go back into like, help me understand how this scam works, because this is a new one.
Oh, it's a good one. It's a good one. It's basically
don't replicate it, but like I want to hear it.
And honestly, our friend Aaron Bach told me about this before it had happened to me. So shame on
and
me.
It for, still happened to you.
Well, I wasn't even thinking about because I'm hiring this other company to go do an outsourced BDR, like try to book appointments for me using Zoom info, and I'm like assuming all of everything's kosher. But as soon as he was sending emails out through my domain, they have a bunch of dummy accounts all over their platform. So if you're just mass emailing people, you're going to hit one of their dummy accounts. It's going to tie back to my company, and that's when I get the cease and desist letter on the back end. So
this is before I joined the company. Yeah, I just want to be clear.
Yeah. Brock would have read that.
Were you sleeping? Like,
I wouldn't have made that.
This is just me trying to have more conversations early in the company and knowing that when you're networking, obviously everything happens randomly and on your network's time and when you're top of mind. And so this was just something I was trying to test out to see how it would work. And it turned into, now it's a $65,000 mistake because they auto-renewed me after that too. And then they told me, oh, there's just no way out of this, man. We have already realized the revenue. We're going to have to keep you in it. So, it's been a three-year
mistake.
Yeah, very expensive mistake.
We're using it now.
We're using it now. Jane uses it now. Our CMO uses it now. But again, like it's something that literally sat on the shelf with a big price point and literally no reason for an ROI with me being the one managing it.
So how could they legitimately sue you?
Well, they probably couldn't, but it was the path of least resistance for me to just make it go away. I was like, okay.
Their premise?
That I was using their database to solicit... or solicit my company to their database without me being a licensee, because this third party was using their corporate licensee, and I didn't realize that he was doing something. Like technically, it would have been on him. Long story short, like I'm not a guy that wants to dwell on mistakes and let it kind of sink me to my core. It was like, I'm like, okay, man, well, it's obviously compromising our relationship going forward, but I'm not gonna sue you for this money. I'm just going to end up paying this and making it go away.
Wow.
Yeah.
Zoom info.
Beware.
Yeah. Yes.
Beware.
But yeah, that again, like I wouldn't say that's a huge mistake or a huge moment of doubt with the company. It's just a dumbass mistake by me.
It's an expensive growing pain.
Yeah, exactly. Brock hears me say that all the time. Just like our bad hire in Chicago, a very quick, expensive insight, understanding that Jeff should probably not be the person exercising the full interview process.
They're all learning experiences.
Yeah, and that's what...
That is what it is about.
Startups are.
Right? Yeah.
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 So you've talked a good amount, especially the COVID part, right, of being isolated and things like that. What were some of the things that you had to implement in your life to make sure you're staying inspired, motivated, you're keeping the business going the right direction? Because especially for somebody that gets energy from being around people, that was not the easiest time in the world.
Right. It was it was the easiest biz dev shift, but the most lacking when it comes to intrinsic motivation of being around people. But
yeah, that's why I'm curious.
Yeah, honestly, at the time, I had just become a new dad, and I'm obsessed with being a dad. Like, everything I do for the business is to get me more time at home. Brock knows this. Like, we hit 3:00. I better have been out the door to drive home to be with my kids, because you really only get, if you work, or I tell my wife this, if you work a real job, I wouldn't be getting home till 6:00. She loves hearing that. And then my kids are going to bed an hour later. I get 1 hour a day with my kids. So so a lot of it for me, I feel like at the point of the pandemic, you know, the company was probably doing maybe 150K in revenue, something like that. So I knew I had to keep pushing. And I also knew that my wife wanted to be a mom, and she was teaching second graders through Zoom through the pandemic. Like, how fulfilling is that? So I had my head down just to be able to continue to grow the company so we could tell her to hang it up and be mom. And now we've got, my little boy will turn one next year. My daughter's 3.5 and my wife's nesting for our third. So I'd say a lot of what's pushed me when it was just me on an island was the reality that I had created by making the leap. And I make this statement a lot to, what I'll call them, soon to be entrepreneurs, is the scariest step I ever took was making that jump out into the entrepreneurial world. And the scariest step I have in my brain right now is ever having to be a part of a corporate company again.
Right.
So I'd say that was the motivating factor, is just making sure what I had created was going to be sustainable and would be able to create a great future for my family.
Yeah. Brock, I want to flip that question to you, because you're in this company from a different perspective, right?
Yep.
And you had a startup exposure before and things like that. So when you came in, got settled, and you figured everything out that you hadn't known from the outside in, what do you do on a consistent basis, whether it's habits or motivation, anything like that, to make sure you're continuing to accomplish the way that you want to accomplish and balance your priorities the way that you want?
You asked the question, Gary, earlier about Jeff, what if people want to, you know, he's walking by, what would you want to do? I just want to be just a positive motivation for Jeff. I mean, when people meet me, I smile a lot. People probably don't trust me because they think I'm way too happy. But I just try to constantly just look at things from a positive lens. And so if I can come in every day, I love our business model. It's one where we can be truly honest with our clients. Mm-hmm. We're not selling a widget. We're not selling a service that doesn't fit every box. I mean, people come to us with problems that we can truly be honest and try to problem solve. And if we can solve it, we can pivot and make a recommendation for someone who can. So I am obsessed with our business model. I came from outside the industry and I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I was just really excited to work with my cousin, my best friend, and it was a dream come true for me to accept that job. But every day I just come in and I just try to be that positive mindset for Jeff, because as I mentioned earlier, we are somewhat opposites and we do attract to each other, but Jeff can be sometimes pessimistic sometimes. So I just want to come in every day and be that positive reinforcement for Jeff so we can keep moving forward.
He tries to keep me out of gap mentality.
Yes.
Oh, that's a good one.
We're reading it right now.
And Gavin and the Game is really good.
So during Jim Dunn's session with you guys,
he had,
and I can't sit on a 3-hour Zoom, so I'd be lying to say that I was getting completely immersed in it. But I did, maybe 20 minutes into that, I'm like, Brock, put a 2-hour block on our calendar every Wednesday. We're going to read books and we're going to talk about them. We're going to have, we'll have lunch afterwards and kind of talk about the things that we got inspired from in that. Because once I became an entrepreneur, I didn't pick up a damn book. For four and a half years,
right.
And so now I'm like, okay, this is the second one I've started, and I'm about halfway through it right now, and I literally just texted my whole family. I'm like, every one of you guys needs to read this, like, and realize there's a lot more benefit to looking back to where you came than always chasing the horizon that's ahead of you. And I'd never really thought about that before. And me and Brock have bounced that off quite a bit. So the goal is for me to read it and then I'll give it over to Brock to try to figure out why the hell I highlighted so much of the book as I've read through it.
Oh, it's a huge, that's huge for you.
It is?
It is.
Yeah, that's big.
And I love it, man. It's a muscle. It's weird because, when you're, working out or you're working on whatever you like to do, whatever your passions and hobbies are, like you see noticeable results. And with the books, it was always just the inertia of blocking the time and committing to it. And now it's just something I could look forward to doing and I'm excited to do. I haven't read your book yet. It's on the coffee table.
you can listen to it now if you want.
Oh, yeah? Do you finish it?
Yeah, it's up.
Gary is the one that does it, too.
Really?
Yeah. What's the mask again? Is that Guy Fox? Or
I asked him that. He's not a V4Net guy. And I was like,
it's just about impostures. But Benjamin Hardy, who wrote The Gap in the Game, that is a great book for anybody listening. Get it. And it's about mindset shifts of the gain is celebrating the incremental victories. The gap is always looking at what you don't have.
Yep.
And man, we've had people within our company that have read it, that it's just really transformed their lives. So that's a great one. And the fact that you said, hey, I got to prioritize it. It's not about time management. It's about priority management. And so the fact that you guys are doing that says a lot. I mean,
it's huge for him too. I don't know if Brock ever picked up a business book before. I think you had to read one for tech systems. I can't remember the name of it. The Liking People one, Friends and Like Influencing Friends and Like.
Oh, yeah. Dale Carnegie.
Mine was the E-Myth that Insperity had us read, and I was like, that's when my gears started really formulating around, okay, what could I do? And then you realize when you're in the ecosystem and you're just having your general conversations with people, you're like, this could actually be a business. And then you just get brave enough to finally make the jump and live off of that Elizabeth Lane Elementary teacher salary for a couple of years.
Yep.
There you go.
On that topic of growth, what are some of the things either of you are doing right now to make sure you're continuing to grow as people, not necessarily as a company, whether it's reading, watching videos, being a part of or groups, anything like that?
Bolero.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bowling. Watching bowling videos.
I'd say that I joined a lot of like entrepreneurial groups as a part of just my normal like itch that I need to scratch anyway. Because you just never, like, you hear about a lot of people's problems and it ends up making you reflect on which problems you either weren't anticipating, didn't even know existed. So that's really the main way that I feel like I learn and grow as an entrepreneur is by being around other entrepreneurs that have made mistakes that I'm eventually going to make or can learn from the mistakes that I've made.
Brock, what about you? What are things that you're doing?
On my side, I'm trying to learn a little bit more on the real estate front. I have a rental property and just trying to be more educated just financially how I can have multiple revenue streams coming into my life.
Yep.
I'm gearing up for, I actually need to talk to my tenant this coming week just to decide if they're going to renew for another year or sell. And if I do, if they move on, I do plan on selling the property. But I'm looking into maybe selling that by owner. So I want to understand that whole landscape and just kind of just going through the minutia, understanding what does this all entail, what goes into it. But that is somewhat of like a little side passion project that I want to be more well-versed in because real estate in Charlotte, it's definitely a good place to dance in.
Yeah. And you know, what do you think that's done for you of getting that exposure, learning about this, especially having it be something on the side that you become more and more passionate about? What do you think that's done for you as well?
Well, I mean, I think the desire to get out of my comfort zone stemmed from me jumping ship up from the software industry and going in full-fledged into PEO. I didn't know a lick of what we were doing. So for me to come in, immerse myself into what Jeff's doing, understanding the ins and outs, and then doing more research on the side, it's piqued my curiosity of what else can I go out and learn. And so understanding this whole real estate landscape, where before I would just blindly just hire a realtor, maybe even property management company, but now I'm trying to understand what can I wrap my arms around and own myself. Just being with Jeff has kind of triggered that curiosity in my mind of what more can I take on in different facets of my life.
I always found it to be criminal that Brock was sitting in a software company's environment and not being out and about. I'm like, Brock, all the people I'm meeting here in this city, and you know how the city is, everyone's new here, so it's super welcoming, and everyone's gonna I came to Charlotte story and here's why. And I knew that once he joined me that he would be an extension of the networking that we do here as a company, and it would really give him a lot of other inspirations for, you know, for his own life and his own development. So it's definitely good to have him out of the office and being in front of people and continue. And Brock just rubs everybody the right way. Yeah. So
he's always smiling.
What's that?
He's always smiling.
Yeah. He's always smiling. And so I felt like even just getting him into this role would really be a light bulb moment for him, because he's always just been stuck in a desk environment, and it's really hard to create a network and create allies and create friends. Yeah. Brock's really good at creating friends, and I think that's really what networking is.
Yeah, I agree. I want to go back to one thing that you said early on in this podcast that I think is super important. So listeners, super important. And that is, you had this mindset when you were at Insperity that you formed alliances with your competition. You did not see them as, a scarcity mindset through a scarcity lens of, oh, if you win, then I lose, or if I win, you lose. It wasn't about that. It was about taking care of people and understanding your sweet spot and having alliances with people. And I'm not talking about, oh, you got to pay me something. I'm just saying, hey, if I find a situation that doesn't fit me, let me take care of you.
Right.
Because that's what people remember.
Right.
And you do that extremely well. And I think that goes back into the gap versus and the gain, especially too, because if you have that mindset of coopetition, if you will,
mm-hmm.
but live in your live in your sweet spot, know what your sweet spot is. And if somebody else is in your sweet spot, fine, they're competition, but they're not the enemy.
Right. Yeah. Because then when you're in those seats where I was sitting before, and you're just saying to go to these competition, and you're not giving them any outlet, they're likely going to go get raked by somebody. So you're better off knowing who you're passing them to and why, and that person can go make you look good at the end of the day. Like, if you're not the right fit, you're just going to make yourself look bad by trying to force that solution. And now in our world, obviously, we're able to find the right solution if there is one to be had inside of our industry. And again, I think that's obviously my first couple of years of this, you say yes to things that I would never say yes to now, and I would really caution people against and really identify all the problems with why they would say yes, and see if they still want to say yes, if all the problems are laid out on the table, then that's on them. But at the end of the day, like, it's very empowering to be able to look a client in the eye and say, I would do what you're doing. I'm using the same PEO that Ben is for my company. Because it makes sense I really think it makes sense for a millennial environment. It's super automated, and you don't have to deal with a whole bunch of back and forth with paper and people and human error.
Oh, yeah. Yep. That's great. And Gary, you do that as well, of the get to know the competition, especially with the biz dev at BGW, of if you're not the right fit, that's okay.
Yeah.
Here's a different solution for you. But you do a good job of knowing that competition, Jeff, to your point, of if you're not the right fit, I want to make sure the handoff is still going to set that person up for success.
Right.
And I think both of you value that relationship so much.
Right.
Yeah.
And that type of character is not always found in a business, which is unique.
It's not incentivized in corporate America. I'll tell you that.
No.
Yeah. If you're talking to your competition, then you're the bad guy. And again, like, I think there's a lot of this closed-mindedness to understanding that there is a niche for all of these PEOs across the different addressable market inside of the client space. And there's a reason they exist, and there's a reason they're still thriving. So turning your blinders on and acting like everybody's the devil besides your own company, your own employer, is so short-sighted, and it's just fundamentally inaccurate.
Yep.
Yeah. The only other thing I'd say is, you mentioned this earlier too, and I think it's worth putting an accentuation point, and that is, know your sweet spot and get to know quickly.
You know,
so have the hard conversations up front so that you're not wasting their time and you're not wasting your time. Huge. But a lot of people don't do that. They just do this dance that wastes a whole lot of time only to get to the no slow.
Yep. 3 weeks later. 3 weeks and probably 10 hours of anxiety later. And it's funny you say get to the no, because I didn't read that book, but that's literally how I operate in every capacity with clients. I'm trying to get to the no in the first 15 minutes talking to them and talking about all the changes that they're going to have to make to work with me. The vendors are going to have to fire, the difficult conversations they're going to have the payroll transition they're going to have to make. And if they still want to keep talking, then okay, we at least understand that we're in the right room at the right time, and we shouldn't just table this for a further conversation. And the prospects appreciate that.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah.
And they refer you more. And it's like, it's very counterintuitive to the scarcity mindset of, I have to close this deal this month, because it opens you up to three more conversations that are way more appropriate for what you're actually after. But it's counterintuitive.
Yeah. But to what Gary was saying, you had to put in the work to figure that out. And if people don't do that, I mean, what you're talking about seems natural, but it's because you did all the work to figure out, where are we the right fit and where are we not?
Right.
So I've got a new advisor who just got licensed a couple months ago, and I'm having him read a book purely to figure out where do you want to become the expert? Because if you're going to be an answer to everybody, you're an answer to nobody.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you've done that with Pair PEO, that people are going to understand who you are and where you're best. I can go talk to another business owner and say, this is what they're doing for me. This is how they were the right fit.
Right.
And if we can communicate that outside of the company, it means you've done the right job and the right work inside to know where you're the right fit.
Right. I speak about lane discipline a lot inside of my networking world, because you wouldn't think that I have great relationships with, you know, healthcare brokers or PNC brokers or even payroll reps, that we're all technically cannibalistic to each other in a way. But at a certain time in the business, my model might make sense. At a certain time in the business, their model might make way more sense. And we have to be mindful of that client's journey, not just where they are right here and now, but where they're going to be. And I mean, I'm going to run this company most likely for the next 10 plus years. So I want to be able to be in those rooms for 10 plus years and not just worried about getting in the room right now and then getting kicked out of it 3 months later and causing a big problem for Brock on the back end.
But yeah, Jeff's really good at walking himself out of the room if it doesn't make sense. Probably more than I would like him to be honest.
That may be the title of this podcast, of how to walk yourself out of the room.
Yeah. But he's really good at pumping the brakes. A client might see some potential savings here and get really excited, but Jeff can even pump the brakes and let the client know, if we're patient for another quarter or maybe we check in another 6 months, I think the timing is going to be better for you and your employees, and I think there's even more savings to be had here. So he's not taking the deal that's right there in front of them. He's getting on the client side of the table and really has true empathy there of helping them make the decision that's best for their company. So I hear a lot of Jeff's calls, and sometimes he gets out the call and like, why are we moving forward? But he proves me wrong every time, being patient and going at the appropriate pace and not at the PEOs, the direct reps that are trying to close the deal. Jeff's boxing all of them now and have a direct line of communication with the client and the decision maker and coaching them through, this is how this is going to play out. And if I were you, I'd wait a little longer. Yeah, and it's a really great mindset to have. And I think he gains unlimited trust with those clients because they feel that while Jeff's not really just looking to close a deal, he has my best interest at heart.
He's done that for us at BGW. I mean, even when I wanted us to pull the trigger.
Yeah, you're a better salesman with BGW than I am.
Man, I wanted it so badly. And I still do. But he's like, no.
Hey, numbers are looking really good this time around.
All right. You hear that, Rachel? Rachel, you better be listening to this one.
Yeah, it's hard for a prospect to believe that that's my mentality for it. But again, I 2 years into it, I don't blame a PEO broker that gets in trying to make sure they survive and stay on their own and have the autonomy that I've enjoyed over the last 5 years. But it was really just a shift in my mind. I feel like a lot of it was Brock coming on board, and I realized that anything I'm doing that's going to cause a mess for him just ends up causing a mess for me. And so it's like, just let's just focus on the right time and let it play out, because it always ends up playing in their favor. They can just be a little patient. Don't get excited. Don't ever show your enthusiasm for a solution. Wait for the real bottom, because the real bottom is never going to happen in the first month of the exercise. Let's just let this thing play out, let it marinate, and let people get itchy on the PEO's front, because that's when the numbers really come down in their favor. And if we're owning the relationship, you know, renewals should stay low. So entry point is key when it comes to the price point, in my opinion, because if we can get into a great entry point, then even if your, you know, increases are going up by 10%, if that number's, you know, 30% lower than what they were going to say yes to anyway, we're still making out, you know, 25% below where they would have been.
Yep. Thank you both for coming on. This has been pretty wide ranging, and I appreciate it. It was nice to have the dynamic of both of you as well. So where can listeners go to follow you or to check out the company?
We are at...
go ahead, Jeff. Talk about it.
Yeah, we're at pairpeo.com, PAIRPEO.com. We just launched a financial calculator, and I'm thrilled about it.
Shut up about it.
I feel like it's the third thing out of my mouth at every conversation I've had ever since this thing got launched last week. And Brock's always in the office with me, just like laughing his knee, laughing his ass off, waiting for the financial calculator reveal. Honestly, like we built this tool for prospects and partners, it's specifically in the financial space, because really you just need to plug in two numbers, and it's going to tell you what we're targeting when it comes to the financial advantages of or disadvantages of the industry. So it's a qualifying tool for a client to say, this makes sense for me. And it also lets them say, this doesn't make sense for me. So they don't have to, you know, go through the exercise of having a conversation and just to realize it's not going to make sense financially. So it's something I'm really excited about. But go on there, check it out. If you're interested in what the industry is going to look like financially for your organization, just plug your numbers in, spits out a number, and if you want to talk, you can book directly through that.
Very cool.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks guys.